Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the MSP Initiative, MSP Talk. If you follow this, you know what I'm about to do, the housekeeping, get it out of the way, and then we'll get to the good stuff. So here we go. That is what this is, MSPinitiative.com. This is everything that we do here at MSP Initiative. So this session, for example, is being recorded. We'll put it out on all our podcatchers and streams and YouTube pages. So like, subscribe, follow, share, all that good stuff. You know what to do. We have MSP Community Minds. This is our educational event that we do. We did one last year in Denver. Next one's coming up in Nashville, April 17th and 18th. We have a slew of MSPs from the real world who are still active MSPs running their businesses that are coming to speak on panels. These are the people that you want to hear from, right? They're not trying to give you an idea. They're trying to tell you what's working for them and what's not. That's the fastest way to learn, in my opinion. We also have experts from around the industry that are going to be presenting on workshops, not, hey, we think you oughta, or maybe you should look into it. We're going to give you actionable information that you can take back and apply to your businesses in multiple categories. So go to MSPinitiative.com under Community Minds, check out all the speakers from panelists to workshop people. And then the agenda for April 17th and 18th is posted. Here's a cheat sheet. Morning times, we're doing panels, MSP panels. Then there's lunch, right? And then afternoon times, we're doing workshops. So you'll get to pick which workshops you go to. We'll try and load balance as best we can. By the way, this event, absolutely free for you to register as an MSP and attend. We'll wine you, dine you, teach you. And we have some cool after hours activities planned. So if you would like to join us, go to MSPinitiative.com under Community Minds and register. It does not cost anything. $3.99, $9.99, $12.99. There's no registration fee. It is free. Yes, I do understand you have to get there. Sorry, but I promise it'll be worth your while. So there's that. Now, the thing that everybody knows us for, I think, are after parties, block parties, party parties. We have a lot of these happening this year. The next two that are coming up happen to be the exact same week, June 9th. So we'll be doing a block party with our friends from PAX 8 at PAX 8 Beyond in Denver. This was an absolutely epic event last year. It's going to be even bigger this year. So if you are even in the MSP sandbox, maybe you're not even working with PAX 8, you should check this out. I think it's going to be worth your while. And then if you're on the other side of the ocean, our friends from Europe, we'll be going back to Kaseya DataCon in Dublin. We had an absolute awesome time there last year as well. We're going to rock and roll, do the block party there, or the official after party, I think is what they're calling it. So we're excited for this one as well. So whichever side of the ocean you're on that week, we will be partying with you. And by the way, if you're an MSP, it costs you absolutely nothing to join. You do have to register ahead of time. We encourage you to, so you don't get stuck in a line typing information into your phone. So there's that. We have some community offers. These are just deals and hookups from other companies in the space. If they work for you, awesome. And our industry calendar. My good friend Jen behind the scenes spends plenty of time across the year adding to this, updating this. It's over 300 events in here for the year. And that's just, I think, North American ones. There's a whole slew of other events that we're adding on the European side as well. So that being said, check it out. If that helps you, MSPinitiative.com. Housekeeping is now done and out of the way. I am happy to welcome the next guest on our show today. There's a lot of people in the sandbox that talk about a lot of things, but I love talking to people who actually care about the things that they're talking about. They live it, they breathe it. You will absolutely find that in my good friend Dom Kirby from PAX 8. How are you doing today, Dom?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to be on the show. I've been waiting for my invite, so thanks for having me.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I knew you were worried. I flew out to Denver Sunday night. I missed the second half of WrestleMania here in Philadelphia to go scope out some venues for the PAX 8 Beyond MSP Initiative Block Party. And I got back at 5 o'clock this morning, and I absolutely am here. So don't worry, man. I made it. Looking really forward to PAX 8 Beyond. I know we'll probably have Rob Ray on at some point to talk about everything that's going to be happening at Beyond. I know that's like the big, I mean, there's actually two Beyonds this year, right? There's a Denver in June, and I believe in October there's Berlin.
Yeah. First year of EMEA Beyond, second year of US Beyond. So I'm excited that we're so rapidly expanding that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, great team that you have over there. Looking really forward to them. It's a lot of interest for sure. I think last year was real, at least the Denver one. That's the one that happened was really well, went really well. Dom, especially when I have people on for the first time, I like to like kind of give people a little bit of your background, right? Like you didn't start at PAX 8, right? You had a whole journey before then. So would love for you to like, you know, go down memory lane a little bit and maybe give the listeners and viewers of this episode a little bit of background.
Yeah. So I realized recently I'm on year 14 of IT and cyber. I'm on year 5 at PAX 8. So it'll be my 5th year anniversary coming up in September, but who's counting? You know, my entire private sector background has been some form of channel. I think even before I understood like what the channel was and that there was this whole community element. And I've loved every minute of it. So I started at like an ITSP that was literally neighboring to my school. You know, my teacher taught me how to write a cover letter, and I wrote a cover letter and was like, hey, I want to do this computer shit. And that's literally how my journey started. You know, someone took a chance on me, mentored me, and I grew my career from there. Spent a little bit of time in the spook space. You know, I don't really talk about it a ton just because I don't like to leverage it as like a cool factor, because it's really not. Like, I sat in a computer in a more secure room than I'm currently sitting in now. So like, don't get too excited. But and then I ran my own MSP after that. So I left that space, started up a shop, really focused on consulting for a while before I realized that, you know, monthly recurring revenue was a valuable thing to have. So in that space, you know, I got to work with big companies with names on buildings and what I colloquially call Tim's Kitten Shop, like, you know, the good old fashioned American small business. And they each have their challenges, but I really like SMB. So I went the managed services route, kind of grew up in the MSP space on the OG Discord and RMSP. And in 2019, I was like, you know, I love this, but I'm kind of done owning a business. So I want to stay close to it. And the PAX 8 opportunity opened up, and I've grown a lot through PAX 8. And so I've always been very security focused and very sort of modern workplace digital transformation focused. So I was able to bring that to PAX 8 and help build our professional services organization and work really closely with Matt on a lot of our cyber education and evangelism initiatives. And that's where my heart is, right? There's 2/3 of the economy is small business, but they're, you know, 80 some odd percent of the cyber trouble we have right now.
It's so true. So true. So today, what is your, like, so I got the evangelism part and you guys do a ton of that. And by the way, feel free to let people know all the stuff that you guys do on a regular basis. I know that there's like a pretty cool schedule that you guys run on. But like outside of that, the other part of your like day job at PAX 8, I think is professional services.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my core function. Right. And ProServe is near and dear to my heart. I have a fantastic team that does fantastic work. And the whole concept is like, when I was running my MSP, a lot of the time when I would find a talent constraint was when we had a lot of one-time projects, a lot of stuff that like we've agreed to do. Now we need to find time to do it. And that's really where my team steps in, is you can get services from us across the Microsoft environment, including Dynamics, and get shit done, essentially, right? So whether it's outside of your skill base, which is common, right? If you're moving into Azure for the first time, that's a different world, or you just need capacity. So I have an infrastructure team, on a workplace team. We're building out a security products team for some upcoming stuff that I'm excited about, to help partners kind of adopt products more efficiently and comprehensively. And then our business applications group, which focuses on Microsoft Dynamics and sort of the ERP CRM space. So it's really just, we're here, we provide services at a mark-upable rate, so that there's some margin built into that. And our only mission is really get your customers down their business journey, right? Help you accomplish that.
Yeah, I mean, the average MSP, like, I mean, there are mega MSPs, don't get me wrong, but like when you put a little Rex Frank on the shelf for a second, take the operational maturity side, question, you know, conversation, put it over here for a minute. Average MSP is probably sub 20, maybe even sub 15, sub 10, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
project work is time consuming. And quite frankly, I think the competency, depending on what you're doing, may not be there, right? Like they're kind of learning on the job. So like the fact that there's an outlet that will do work, I assume that there's like a, maybe walk us through the process real quick. Like if, let's say somebody's like, hey, I got a project. How do I figure out what's included in the work that you do and how much are you going to charge me for it?
Yeah. So we're in the middle of a rebuilding and sort of standardization process. So it's in a state of change. We've partnered with Microsoft to build best practices. And then we take those and we talk to PAC members and just general MSPs that we know. And we say, hey, here's how we'd like to see things done. Does this vibe with kind of what you want to accomplish? And we've hit the mark for the most part. We're making adjustments. But to work with us, it's super straightforward. There's a product in our marketplace called PAC State Professional Services. It's $0. You buy it. And that triggers my team to work with you. So we'll get you on a call. I have a pre-sales group. They're called Discovery. They work through like, what are you actually trying to do here? They'll run you through whatever technical steps we need from you to measure with precision. And then they'll get you a scope of work that'll have pricing and things like that. A really interesting thing we're able to do is because of our scale and position, is we have funding programs from Microsoft. So I don't think this year, actually there's been one. So I've charged one partner this year for an Azure migration. Microsoft has picked up the rest of the bills, which is a fantastic program. And we're just now starting to expand that into security and modern workplace. But yeah, you get a scope of work, you sign it. I have a full operations team of project managers and coordinators that keeps things on the tracks. And then our engineers execute alongside you. So it's a shared responsibility model. I'm not going to go set up your end users' cell phones, but we'll take care of all the back end work, at the data where it needs to be, looking how it needs to look.
I just want to make sure I heard you right. You've only charged one MSP for a Microsoft Azure migration this year, and the rest, I assume there's been more than one, have been
work here. So yeah, definitely more than one.
Yeah. So the rest have been covered by Microsoft, as in the bill to the MSP is zero.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a program, Microsoft. It's through their Azure Migrate Modernize program, right? So we've earned the competencies to be in that, or badges to be in that program, because of our scale. So we apply that towards partner-facing projects, right? So if you're migrating data, to simplify it, from not Azure into Azure, then that program or that project qualifies for the program, and Microsoft pays the bill.
I mean, it's free money.
It's free money. And you can charge your customers. Like most of our partners are still charging their customers, and you should. It's a highly valuable service, right? They're just taking care of our fees, which I think is fantastic. And it's worked well for Microsoft. There's obviously an ROI measurement in there, but it's panned out well for us, for Microsoft, and our partners.
So I'm going to pause you right here then, because I'm sure we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
If somebody's interested on this program, where do they go to get more information?
So you can head up your account team. You should have an infrastructure solutions consultant, and they are essentially your person for all things infrastructure. Or you can check out that PAC State Professional Services product I was telling you about, and we'll run you through it.
I mean, if that's not a takeaway from this, I don't know what is, but we're going to get into a lot of other stuff. Lisa pops in on LinkedIn and says, was there an exit strategy for when you had the MSP and then decided to migrate to the other side of the aisle, or like what happened there?
Yeah, so I kind of had this epiphany. I was hanging out with Ken Patterson and Ryan Walsh, as one does when you're a PAC State partner. And we were at a bar, and I just kind of had the epiphany. I was like, I was kind of done. You know, things like tax returns were driving me crazy, and legal and all that fun stuff. So I kind of made the decision then, and I was fortunate at the time I started building my network in the channel. I had friends. I had local friends. So I didn't do a full acquisition, and that was very intentional. So I actually chopped up and sold the book of business to kind of partners a best fit, which worked out really well. I believe there's been full retention there, which is great. And I kept the brand and all that. So if I ever decided I wanted to go back, I could literally launch the same company again. So it worked out, and it's not the ideal exit strategy. Like, to be totally blunt, I could have made more money had I just sold the business wholesale, because I had this healthy consulting arm and things. But, you know, the transition to PAC State was simple. They're local. They were one of my best strategic partners when I ran the shop, and I wanted to duplicate that. So it was pretty, it was a pretty straightforward choice. There wasn't really another, I was vetting other things, but PAX 8 stood out.
So that whole process, like you made the decision, you pieced out your book to, you know, a couple different places, it sounds like, and then you came online on PAX 8 all within what period of time?
Oh man, that's 45 days.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah. Well, I didn't sell the whole company, right? So we didn't, there wasn't that due diligence factor. There wasn't that. There was a lot of introduction meetings, kind of explaining to my clients what I'm doing, and kind of moving through that. I also didn't have like a significant W-2 force, so there wasn't that conversation to be had. So mine was low complexity compared to a lot of others.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, I listen, there's a lot of ways to do this, but that's a cool story because it went pretty quick. Hopefully painless for you, and hopefully that was the last complex tax return you had to do that year.
Yeah, you know, now investing options, and that's its own, you know, complexity. But
I get it. There's, you know, the government is a tricky organization for sure. Talk to us about you and Matt Lee work, you know, do a lot of stuff online. There's a lot of content you guys are producing. Just because I don't want to forget at the end, what are the things that you guys do on a regular basis that you put out for content?
So the number one thing is the game. So every Friday, on YouTube, PAX 8 Cloud, come join us. It's at 2 o'clock. It's also going to move to Wednesday in the future, 'cause a lot of folks have told us that Friday afternoon is tough. And I concur. I'm usually trying to start my weekend by the end of the show. But we bring on typically a guest every week, or sometimes just Matt and I do a show. And the only intent is to talk cyber or some sort of operational maturity concept around cyber. So we've had Alex Spiegel on. We've had people from CISA, the FBI. Brad Gross has been on to talk about some of the legal complexities. We have a couple exciting Microsoft names on the list. So I have a principal product manager coming in a few weeks. I can't give you his name yet, but it's going to be a cool one. If you're into identity, you want to come to that show. But it's mostly just to shoot the shit. Like, there's no agenda, you know, there's no sponsorship spots. We bring people on if we like them and they have a good message to share. So that's the number one way. We'd love to have more audience there, get the chat a little more active. And if you want to be on it, like, hit me up on LinkedIn, let me know what you want to talk about. We'd love to have folks on the show. Other than that, so we run a lot of programs through our PAX 8 Academy. A lot of that is absolutely free for any of our partners. You just sign on with your partner account. So there's CIS control courses. There's general information. We're working on content for learning how to use products. We're working on general cyber education content that's just going to be available. Matt leads instructor-led courses. So they do cost, but they're live. You can work through. You come out with functional policies and a really deep understanding. And I think one of the more exciting things coming out, and you've kind of seen, you know, hints of this, is our product mapping, right? So there's this hugely monolithic program to take all of our products and map them to CIS controls that are in the PAX 8 marketplace. But we've since expanded that to be more of a community-based thing that we help facilitate. And it's not quite ready for release yet, but I would urge you to stay tuned for that around the Beyond timeframe, because I'm really excited to launch that program. I think it really illustrates that, like, look, PAX 8 has a commercial interest in these kind of things, right? Like, it's just as I wear the logo, but we've really worked to build it to be a community-based thing that everyone can benefit from, perhaps including vendors that aren't today on the marketplace. And I think that for me speaks to the fact that we were able to do that, even though we worked for PAX 8, speaks volumes.
I 100% agree. So I guess to find information about that program, the game, on which is right now Fridays, soon to move to Wednesdays, they're going to probably hit your LinkedIn feed, but also look at PAX 8 Cloud, which is what, the Instagram and
on
Twitter?
YouTube.
Got it. Yeah. Perfect. I'm glad I confirmed YouTube, the place where all video goes, I feel like. So zooming out, right? Now that you've been on both sides of the aisle, right? You were Dom MSP consultant guy. Now you're in Dom PAX 8 vendor who services MSP guy. More recently, Dom, hey, I'm helping you with pro services that may not actually cost you a dime guy. Where are you seeing the largest struggle from your chair in like the MSP space, right? Like, are you still seeing the same things that just repeat themselves year over year? Or are you seeing new challenges now that have been popping out since you joined Paxig?
You know, I think the cybersecurity conversation is the first thing that comes to mind. The services thing will be there forever. Like, it's just hard to scale around one-time services. Yeah. And that's why I believe in our service program and I'm happy to run it. But cybersecurity, I think, is an important topic, right? Like I said, as MSPs, you know, we're serving roughly 2/3 of the economy in pretty much any given country, by the way. Like that statistic carries in a lot of places. And I don't think cybersecurity is a new challenge. I think we've been talking about it a lot louder for the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, but it's always been there, right? I just think over time, threat actors have innovated. And the whole excuse of like small business isn't worth it just isn't true. It's too easy to attack at scale. It's too easy to extract money. And insurance exists. So now you can get blood from a rock, right? So it's for me, the most pertinent conversation. I think it's the most important thing right now. And I understand there's sales. Rex hates it when I say that's the most important thing. He doesn't hate it, but you know, he's like, no, sales, operational maturity. And I'm like, yes. But all of that falls apart if we can't secure it all, right? And it's tough. But I will say, you know, we go to events. Exchange Security is a great example. I went to the first ever one of those. I went to the second one. I'm going to the third one this year. And every time we go to an event like that, we get challenged more and more, which is great. It shows maturity. If you're asking me deeper questions that I need to struggle with, that's what I want, right? So I'm seeing the growth and maturity, but understanding of the fact that there's a really large chunk of our industry that hasn't matured to that yet. And we're really trying to work to get everyone to mature their cyber postures, work with their customers, secure their own house. And the more progress we can make on that, the better shape we'll be in general, right? But it's a long journey. And I would urge everyone, you know, and it's not just me, it's Matt and it's, you know, our friend Roddy, who went to SureWeb, but I still love him. You know, we're all out here teaching, literally just in hopes that we can improve your situation. Like Mac from BlackPoint is another great example. We really want this to improve so that we can be safe and protected and see growth that we know we can sustain because it's not going to get taken from us. So I would urge everyone to approach cybersecurity with a very open mind, constantly be looking to learn new things. Get your people to learn new things, right? Send them out for different certs than you normally would. I just got my CISSP and I found it immensely valuable to study that. Thank you. That was a fun test. And the more you learn and the more you apply that learning, the better off you're going to be. And I think we're coming to a point where customers are more self-aware of this. Like it's in the news cycle. It's a constant conversation. They're your cyber insurance carrier is beating you up. They're more self-aware of that. And I think security done correctly and positioned right is a huge competitive advantage over over perhaps your neighboring MSPs, right? If you have security on lock and you can clearly articulate, I have a cybersecurity program, I'm not just throwing tools at you. I think that's massive, right?
Unfortunately, a lot of people say they have a lot of stuff in place and they market things and it may not be, you know, not all things, you know, are equal.
Yeah.
And there's one thing Matt Lee said that stuck in my head from a year and a half ago. What you're using today may not be the same thing you'll be using a year from now. Like things change, right? And like, if anything, why cybersecurity is so difficult to keep up with is that it's not static, right? Right. It is constantly moving. And so if you are of that mindset that, well, I already have everything I need, I got my tools, I set them up. Maybe I got some outside help to consulting, right, to make sure I have everything in place. But like, time will change whether that is effective or not.
Yeah, and I think the important thing I try to put in front of people is you're facing a threat actor that has virtually infinite resources they can use to beat you, yeah. Right? They're winning millions of dollars at a time, and they have all the time and resources they need to come up with something new, right? And us as practitioners, we have a budget and we have clients who only have so much money to spend on this. And we have clients who have other business priorities because they're also running businesses that they're trying to grow and succeed and feed their family and hit payroll and all these stresses that come with the business. So it's really hard to get the right amount of mind share. So I would urge, and look, I come from a company that sells tools, right? And I tell people all the time, I want you to buy tools from us, but I don't want you to buy tools from us if you don't understand how to use them, right? If you cannot build the operational maturity, which is cyber operational maturity is entirely separate from your MSP's operation. They merge in places, but they're two concepts. If you can't build an information security program for yourself and for your customers, then the tools don't matter, right? I could buy all the tools in the world. If I haven't applied them in a way that makes sense, I'm still going to get beat and I'm not going to understand why. So it's that concept of you're going to lose, right? And I hate to say it, but you're going to lose at some point. You either have or will experience an incident, right? So you need to focus time and energy on that comprehensive program, right? Do you identify, do you protect, but also you got to be able to detect, respond, and recover, right? And if you're not ready for that, that's what's going to catch you off guard and really hurt you. And I would urge everyone to be prepared and to build a program around that and be ready to detect, respond, and recover, right? And you do that through, you know, protective controls, whether that's limiting blast radius through proper access control and having those conversations. But you also do that through understanding how your incident response is going to work. Know that you're going to experience an incident. Build an incident response plan, tabletop and test it and keep it up to date. And to your point, that's a practice, right? We call ourselves practitioners because we're practicing. We're constantly trying to get better at this, understanding we need to innovate against an adversary that's innovating every day.
Wow. I mean, that was well said. I think if we just took that and like used that as a, hey, wake up call, tools alone aren't going to save you. I mean, like, there's a lot of truth to that. And quite frankly, that's what people like. I think very few vendors that are selling at the events that we all know and love and go to are coming at people saying, hey, here's the big picture of what your total pack, you know, security practice should look like. And here's where we sit. It's kind of the inverse of that. It's, hey, just buy us. You'll be okay. We got you. You know, like, you know, like press the button, go, and you're good. And I don't think that holistic approach, like, I think CompTIA Trustmark is something that's doing good things, but it takes time and energy, just like anything else. Like if you're going through any sort of compliance framework, but I would beg to, you know, put a idea out there that I would say the most MSPs out there have just heard the message. Well, the guy next to me is using this, so I'm going to use that because he said it works. And, you know, I outsource as much as I can because I don't have security experts on staff or knowledge set, and, you know, hope for the best. Try and limit vulnerability by contract and go from there, right?
And it's not their fault. It's really not, because to your point, that's what the marketing says. We see things like cyber immune and stops all threats and 100%. That literally doesn't exist. Like if you need a takeaway, there is no such thing as 100% protection. It can't be done. Right. However, when you look at that holistic picture, and we're really working with a lot of our vendor partners to get better at this, of saying, hey, you know, this is a great product, right? But you got to stop telling my partners it stops all threats, right? We need to help them build a mature cyber operation, right? They need to do security operations, and we want your tool to be a part of this. And that's an advantage we have at PAX 8, is we do cover a large portion of the stack. So we really are working to say, yes, we would sure love it if you bought products. You know, again, I'm vesting shares. I would sure love it if you bought products. But I think if we take a step back, I need you to understand the practitioner side, the human side of cybersecurity, the analytical and strategic side, to say, okay, here's my framework, and we love CIS, but here's my framework. Here's what I've got covered, right? And here's where I have gaps. And then I can start to look at products from the lens of a practitioner, and I can say, all right, I need something. My customer wants Copilot. I need something to implement data management and data loss prevention. Great. Now I have a very specific business problem, so that when I come talk to my PAX 8 team, I say, I have this specific business problem. And it empowers our security solutions consultants, who are kind of like those infrastructure guys, but for security, to say, great, we've trained them all in CIS, by the way, to say, great, here's what we have that covers that. And that's where that product mapping comes from. And now we can have much more in-depth conversations with you. And like, yes, again, they're sales guys. They want you to buy a thing, but you're giving them exactly what they need to propose the right things. And they're going to let you pick out of what we say covers that control and what's been validated through that community motion. And that's really how I would love every MSP to approach security. And if you're not ready for a whole framework, and a lot of us aren't, I wasn't early in my cyber journey. There's a concept called the cybersecurity bell curve. And Microsoft puts out a great graphic. You can just Google it. It's five things, right? And I'm not going to remember them off the top of my head, but, you know, endpoint protection, MFA is the biggest one, data loss or access controls, data controls. There's five steps you can take. And if you can start there, right? And this is, I've actually changed my decks to say, please start with these five things and then come talk to me about CIS. But if you can get all your customers into that secure baseline in that bell curve, it, you know, according to Microsoft, stops 98% of attacks. I'm going to go with like 80% of automated attacks is my guess. But it puts you or your customer far and ahead of many others. And my point is you've got to do something, but you have to think strategically.
I'm going to say something that maybe won't go over well because of all, you know, all the things you do with Microsoft, but they just got hit themselves, right? Like, didn't all their like executive, you know, like emails get compromised and like, I don't know who, if they've ultimately determined who it is out of the country, whatever, but like there's been a consistent conversation about, hey, too many eggs in the same basket. Like, do you trust it? And if they can't protect themselves, does what they're telling you work? Right. Like,
yeah. So we just did an episode of the game with Greg Kutzbach. We played this game of whodunit because that news, there was this random website that put out this article around the biggest Azure breach ever. So I want to be clear, it was not a compromise of Azure. We'd be having a very different conversation if it was. But it was a Microsoft corporate incident. And look, like I said, there is no such thing as 100% protection.
Sure.
Right. And it is concerning. And I did have conversations with Microsoft about it, some under NDA and some where I can tell you they were like, hey, Dom, like, we screwed up here, right? And that one is exciting to me, right? Yes, they had an incident, but how many other mega providers put that stuff out and say, here's a news release that says, here's exactly what happened. And they've been surprisingly open and encouragingly open to your exact criticism of, yep, we experienced an incident. Here's our learnings from it. So I don't know that I hold that a, I mean, look, it sucks. It sucks when you hear that the person or the group hosting your data experienced or whatever, right? You can go back to Rackspace and Hosted Exchange and those kind of incidents. The difference is, and for me, the way it was handled was done with a staggering amount of transparency and acknowledgement that there was something wrong here. So, yeah, it's a risk. That's a risk you take. And if you go down that practitioner route, start learning that, you'll learn that all we're doing in InfoSec is balancing risk, right? We're doing something with risk. And I personally have not shifted my own stuff away from Microsoft. Now, let's have the all eggs in one basket conversation, because I was the all eggs in one basket guy. I never put all my eggs in one basket at a certain point, but I think for me, it depends on what can I operate with, right? If I'm going to buy a product, I need to understand what gap I'm going to try to fill, which is going to be some kind of control for me, right?
Sure.
And then I need to understand what can I actually operate? I can buy it and I can turn it on. In fact, my services team will be able to turn it on for you here soon. Can I use it? Let's just pick on Sentinel One, right?
Okay.
Sentinel One's a fantastic tool, but it's going to throw incidents at me.
Yeah.
Right. What do I do when I get an incident? Do I just turn it off and forget about it? Right? Like, just clear it? Or do I have an incident response plan where I analyze it and understand? Or do I not have the maturity to do that and I need to look at managed detection and response so I have someone to do that for me? So if I'm shopping around what tool fills the need and has a good amount of efficacy, right? You know, sort of the top right of the quadrant kind of thing. But what can I actually operate with? And that's going to drive my decision. So that might drive some of my decisions towards Microsoft. It might drive my decision towards a different endpoint product. But I need my team to be able to use that tool and be effective practitioners with it. That's my core decision making. And today, given a lot of the advancements in the Microsoft space, it might be a somewhat heavy Microsoft stack, but I also know that I'm going to need MDR. So I might find an MDR vendor. I also know that I'm going to need SOC. maybe a certain endpoint works better across the types of endpoints I manage or the types of customers I manage. So there's so many decision points you have to factor in that I wouldn't call it all eggs, one basket. I would call it, I've built a stack that I can run with confidence.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and we've talked about it on this show a thousand times, right? It's like, hey, I bought something because it was popular and everybody else bought it. Or maybe I bought something and like, I didn't even, 6 months later, I didn't even turn on yet. Still paying for it, right? Kind of thing. And like, because the marketing is meant, you know, like so easy a caveman can do it, right? Like this thing just runs, it's automation, you know, like turn the ignition, let it go. Like there's a lot of marketing around that. And you know, it's no different than the RMM back in the day, right? It's like, hey, you know, like we're going to try and automate as much as we can for you. But like, it was really in the very, very beginning, an empty shell, right? You had to actually build stuff to make it work for you. And a lot of people just didn't either have time or have competency. So like, fast forward to 2024, I feel like we're in that same zone in this topic, right? It's like, hey, I know I have Microsoft out there because everybody's on Microsoft, but I'm not a Microsoft lockdown guy, right? Like I would need to go somewhere to help me make that a little bit more secure because whatever they give me out the gate is not that, right? Or, hey, you know, these are the vendors that people are flocking to. I've plugged them in. Maybe I'm in a peer group. Maybe I met somebody on the show. They're using this. They said they had a, you know, it's been good. So I started using it. Like, you know, a lot of that thinking is how the industry moves, right? So I think, you know, I know your position is, hey, we're just trying to educate people so that the bar is moved up. Got it. But to the same point of, hey, if I go to a breakout at any conference and they give me the idea that I need to start looking into something, it doesn't necessarily spell out, well, this is what gets you to my outcome, right? It's like, hey, you need to do some homework and figure out what you need to do to start driving down this road. And you know, the Achilles heel of that entire thought is time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a huge problem. I think, you know, I don't know. It's still a problem for me because I'm a director at PAX 8 and my calendar is nuts, but in an when I was running an MSP, it was a real problem. I would say, you know, one, those conference conversations need to continue, right? Like the most valuable thing I glean from a conference happens after the conference, right? We go to dinner, we have a drink, and we have real conversation. I learned so much about people and their business and their struggles, and you know this better than anyone. The block parties are fantastic for that, right? So continue those conversations, and you should come out of them with like, oh yeah, I do that with, you know, whatever tool, and it's good. It's good because this, it's bad because that. I would say at some point you have to find the time though, right? You have to dig one or two layers deeper from that bar conversation, whether it's calling that person back and really figuring out how they use it, or working with the vendor or with us at PAX 8 or whoever you're working with to really understand that product and understand how it fits in operation. Like it's going to require a time investment, and there's really not much of a way around that. Like when I say I want you to get educated, I know that takes time, right? Yeah. When I say I need you to research your products, I know that takes time. However, I would look at it as if I can build a really mature information security program for myself, the MSP, and for my customers, it's going to save you a lot of time when the event comes, you know what I mean? Where you're ready to manage it. You've invested the time, you have the right stack, you're good at it, you're good at using that stack, and you've done the whole incident response side. The time you're going to save when you're ready, when you can break out the book that you're confident in and you start following the steps and start handling the exceptions, it's going to pay off, and you will have an incident, right? And I'm not trying to be the doom and gloom guy. From a data perspective, I can tell you will have an incident, and everything in security operations and sort of that strategic side of information security is preparing for an event. Might be a small event, might be the event, but if you're prepared for that, I think that the time investment up front is going to save you a ton, right? It's the same. We had this conversation with Brad around like, it's going to take time to work out the right contract for your business, right? I can't take boilerplate MSA and boilerplate scope of work and start selling IT services. Your contract needs to be aligned to how you do business, right? That takes time, takes money. But if you do it right, you're building a foundation that your business can grow on. And man, operational maturity in the cyberspace and the business space goes so far towards pushing your EBITDA up, but also pushing your resale value up if you plan to exit, right? So you're also taking the time to build an asset of a business if that's your intent is to exit someday.
Well, I would say that a lot of that's been happening, and I would say it's going to continue to happen.
Yeah.
And we've had people like Reed Warren in from IT Valuations and other places that are, you know, this your exact point has definitely changed the number that's being offered.
Yeah.
Right. Like, hey, your numbers are good. You know, your employees, you know, are great. Your customers stick around. You have long-term agreements that people, you know, or have been around for a long time. So, you know, maybe just as good.
Right.
But this is like not good over here. And if we got to do this work to clean it up, then, you know, it's almost like you're buying a house, right? Hey, there's some problems. We're going to deduct this so that we can cover it after we buy the place.
Oh, yeah. I bought a house last year in 22. So like after that inspection, I saved a few bucks, right? And it's the same concept. And it's also like, can it be held together? So much about cybersecurity from a defensibility perspective is about having it written down, which is great. It's going to help you in court. But if that program can't continue because Dave or whoever left the company, you've got an issue, right? Like if it's dependent on one dude or one person, then it might as well not be there. So it's, again, it's about investing into that operational maturity and readiness, and being super transparent about it, that like we expect an incident to occur, so we're preparing for it.
Sure.
And I think that's an easier, for me at least, an easier conversation to have with a customer when you're having that security conversation around like, look, we're building all these protective controls. We have a stack. We're very confident in our stack. We understand how it works. You know, maybe it's got whatever, it's got some MDR provider that does the human element. You can have those conversations, but I think there's value in being the person that comes in and says, you're going to experience an incident, right? We're going to do everything we can to prevent it, and we're going to do everything we can to mitigate the impact of that incident, but it's going to happen. One of your employees is going to click a thing, and
you're going to have a car accident. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that happens, like, what is it? One car accident every 3 minutes or something like that? Is there, I know there's a lot of overlap in this conversation, right? But like, and back to the all eggs in one basket piece, like, example, would you have Duo and Microsoft, Authenticator running side by side as like a, hey, you know, like, I don't want to put all my faith into just the Microsoft route. I'm going to do a secondary option. Or is that too much? Or, you know, like, you know, Windows Defender and another something or other on the, yeah, you know, on the endpoint, SentinelOne maybe. All right. Or
yeah.
Like, is that crazy? Is that now doubling up? Is it too much? Or are you seeing stuff like that?
So those are two different conversations, because you covered endpoint and you covered identity, right?
Sure.
So let's start with identity. I am a huge fan of Entra or Azure AD. And I centralize on that when I build, which isn't often. So when I build my own nerd lab, you know, it's all on Entra. But I think it's really a business decision, right? Duo has some fantastic elements for the way they do push and things like that, that some people prefer over the way user interaction with Entra happens. So there's that conversation. What I personally would not do is have Duo and Entra both doing MFA. Now you're asking your users to do two dances and they're going to hate it and it's going to be a thing. So I think from that perspective, if your identity is in Microsoft, I would personally use Microsoft MFA, right?
Okay.
If it's an Okta, I would use Okta MFA. And Duo is, you know, not an identity provider, so you kind of snap their MFA in wherever. But that's a really great question. On the endpoint, it also depends, right? Like for me, I think right now I would probably go the Defender route with an MDR add-on, so like a Huntress or a Blackpoint or one of those,
mm-hmm.
where they're monitoring that and they're providing that human side for me. If I can be operationally mature with it, if I can manage it centrally, if I understand how the alerts happen. If I can't do that, then it's not the product for me, right? And it comes back to that operational vetting. Then it might be SentinelOne because it has a integration into my PSA, or the MDR is going to work better for me because of the way they operate. So you really have to vet these things out. I don't know. It depends. There's no concrete answer to that. You really have to evaluate for your team and you, how am I going to do the best operational job, the best human work towards my end objective of preventing an incident and being able to respond to an incident.
I was talking to somebody maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and the topic was, you know, like business premium and above have all of these additional Microsoft security things in there that nobody's using, right? Like, is it because it's hard to use and it's not easy to implement? Or is it because, you know, or there's just an educational gap? They don't realize that part of the package, you know, of premium or E1, E3, whatever, has these additional features in there. You know, like on one side of the aisle, you have somebody saying, you really could consolidate everything, like pretty much a majority of your vendors into a higher level of Microsoft. Again, with the asterisks of all of, you know, all your eggs in one basket in there and part of the conversation. The other part is, hey, are you overpaying for a higher tier plan of Microsoft that you're just not using, right? Like, how do you attack those angles there?
Man, that's a good one. So let's talk about business premium. It's I think it's $22 MSRP, something like that. The core stack is Microsoft 365. So I don't know if that is SharePoint, Outlook, and all that junk, Teams. Let's talk about that security layer. So in a nutshell, you're getting Entra ID premium. You're getting Purview labeling. You're getting Purview, a light-ish version of Purview DLP. I wish there was more there. And you're getting Defender for Office and Defender for Business, which is their endpoint product, kind of watered down for business. So all of that's great. That's a great stack. And if you did the math, you're probably over $22 if you bought, like, I don't know, a business standard and then some other IDP and some other endpoint. So I think financially, for me, I don't know that I'd have trouble. Now, I haven't priced a stack in a while, by the way, so that's my caveat. But I don't know that I would have trouble making financial sense of the Microsoft decision. And again, I'm a big Entra guy, so I would take full advantage of Entra P1. You should go learn conditional access. You should understand how it applies to your framework controls. It is not defensible, in my opinion, to just use the per user like tick on MFA. I think you need to use conditional access or security defaults. But if we blow it up a little bit, I'm going to go all the way back to operations again. If I can operate on that stack, then I might pick it. Right now, I need to understand that customer's environment. Right? Are they mostly Mac? Are they mostly PC? Do I need to look at device management for Android and iOS? Right? You get Intune bundled into that. But if you really want the simple answer, and this is kind of the when I'm having this conversation at the bar, and they say, "Shut up and answer me." It's look, if I only use Entra and Intune and I manage my users' devices and I roll out application protection, and then I do conditional access for, you know, MFA, maybe geolocation and some device compliance stuff, that's worth it, right? If you just price out pretty much any MDM and any IDP, you're probably going to be and like business standard, you're probably going to be above $22. So if you completely ignore the endpoint stuff, if you completely ignore Defender for Office, which I understand Defender for Office has had its trouble with a lot of folks, I think you're probably financially whole in today's pricing market, or near it, where I would push the business premium conversation with just those two products.
Okay, got it. Good answer. Probably not your department, but I think they just decided Teams is being split away from Microsoft, at least on new subscriptions. I think I read that was this past week or something. I'm sure that'll be an interesting conversation moving forward because now it bears a cost, right? So the net result to the end customer is it's effectively a price increase. If you can, you know, like I didn't get into the weeds on, well, if you already have it, how long does it stay included? But I definitely for net new subscriptions, it's a separate thing, right? So could be interesting moving forward as people have really, you know, I think, you know, adopted Teams as at least a collaboration tool, definitely during 2020, 2021, 2022. That being said, you know, now we're on, I think year two, maybe two and a half of NCE, right? Like in your opinion, from where you sit, has all of that kind of washed out now? Like, No, yeah, is it, or is it still bubbly?
I mean, look, it's still a talking point, right? And there probably could have been some better execution from our friends at Microsoft on how they do that. Like, there's no debate. I don't know that it's washed out. Like, it's still a conversation I have from time to time. I think at this point, I would, for my own, if I was still doing my own practice, it would want to be something that I would want to wash out. Like, what? Okay, it's here. What am I doing with NCE? Let's write this into the procedures, and this is now how we operate. Like, I think we need to do that. It's not going away, right? As unpopular as that opinion might be, I think we just need to live with it. Now, the whole Teams thing, you know, I don't know if you remember like the Netscape case back in the day.
I do, yeah.
It was literally going that direction with Teams in Europe being bundled in. It's called a competitive advantage by Salesforce and Slack. And now we're appeasing the regulators. I don't know if I agree. I think Teams and Slack could easily be two different tools, but I digress. The challenge, I think, is how do you deal with that, right? Yeah. Like, I live in Teams. I send far more Teams and emails. Most of my meetings are in Teams. It's my office phone. Like, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have Teams. In fact, that time it was out for a day, my whole department was like freaking out because we were standing up Slack and trying to get work done, and standing up Slack within corporate policy, by the way, trying to get work done. And that was a real moment of like, okay, we need a redundancy policy here. But I think if you're ingrained in Teams and your customers ingrained in Teams, at least at the level that like I function out of it, you're not moving, right? And I think Microsoft knows that. I haven't looked at the numbers, so I don't know what they are. For me, if we're talking about a dollar, I would probably just work with the customer on it.
It's something like $5.
$5 net more than they're spending today?
Yeah, per user.
That might be a tougher conversation. Oh, see, now we have to go dig into this with Chris and Fehrenbach and the team. But the core or the root of the challenge kind of annoyed me, right? I didn't see it as an anti-competitive move to bundle it in. Mm-hmm. But it's where we're at. So it's another thing we're going to have to figure out. And I think NCE, look, it's still a conversation point. And there's, you know, with the way NCE was rolled out and the timing, we at PAX 8 is an aggregator of Microsoft subscriptions. We have this period of time where a whole lot of NCE subscriptions are renewing, right? It's just, yeah. So we see a huge swell in activity in our platform. Our support teams get busier and we prepare for that every year and we're ready for it. But I think as an MSP operating with it, for me, I personally would have accepted it's not going anywhere. How do I work with this? Honestly, I probably would have kept doing the monthly and passed on the 20%. But you got to find a way to make it work, right? It sucks. I'm not a fan of it, but it's here. We got to work with it. I don't know. We'll see where the Teams thing goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, those pesky regulators, they always throw a wrench into something, right? especially in Europe. Oh, it always comes from there for some reason.
Did get USB-C on the iPhone. So like that is a win.
Okay. Fair. And then, like, I think some at one point, I don't know if it was ever resolved, but wasn't there a challenge against something in the iWatch and then like they stopped importing?
Oh, the it's like the EKG sensor or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's crazy. Technology, right? It's like,
right.
I feel like technology like kind of runs over here in a separate lane. And then like at some point, like it comes behind, right?
Yeah. They'll
come away, you know, and it's like, oh, movie recommendation. If anybody didn't watch it, went out to Australia a couple weeks ago. And I watched the Blackberry movie on the plane.
Oh, really?
So good.
Okay.
So good. So if you haven't watched it, it's like you can rent it for like $3.99, whatever. Go watch it.
Okay.
Mind blowing. Like it's actually listed as a comedy, but it's like effectively a documentary of what happened.
Huh. All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go check it out. And it like really blow your mind. At that, you know, no surprise here. They're selling zero Blackberries today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not shocked by that one. Yeah.
But they definitely were just ahead of their time and got wiped out. So
I mean, we could do another one about Windows Phone if we wanted to. Whole another movie.
I feel like they gave up on Windows Phone too early.
Yeah. Well, I think they started at too late.
Right.
iOS and Google had like built the App Store, and
yeah,
Google, or Microsoft had to spend a ton more money to get like an even
which is ironic, because that's part of, I don't, and again, it's documented story, like that's part of BlackBerry's downfall, that they didn't adopt the third-party developer kind of marketplace model, right? So, surprise.
I loved my BlackBerry back in the day, though, man. That was one of my favorite phones.
They worked, right? Like, they were really, like, rock solid. And you'll see at the end of the movie, like, how that whole, you know, like, BlackBerry was really smart about how they were able to, like, slim down the data utilization across the network, right? And I think that was, like, the whole magic behind it. And then when the iPhone came out, it was like diesel. You know, it's like pour as much data as like you can put into your car, right? Just burn it. So it was an interesting story, but definitely go watch that. I'll come back and remind you guys about that. Dom, we're at the hour. We could probably go for another hour, like not even blink. Like there's just so much good stuff to talk about. We'll definitely get you back on. I know, you know, we're definitely gonna see it beyond for sure.
Oh, yeah,
I'll be there. Mark that down. Check out PAX 8 Cloud on YouTube for the show, right? The Friday, the game, right? With you and Matt Lee. And then Dom Kirby on LinkedIn, K-I-R-B-Y. If you didn't know how to spell his last name, there you go. People who are listening. So hit him up on LinkedIn, or I'm sure he's on everywhere if you have any questions. By the way, guys, still can't. I'm going to highlight it again. Free Microsoft Project money. If you're not taking advantage of it, you literally throw money. It's almost like they were giving free tax money away, and you didn't, you know, you didn't take it. So, like, definitely look into that. And we'll have Dom back on for sure.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
100%. So this session was recorded. We will post it on MSBinitiative.com. We'll post it on the podcatchers and YouTube and all that jazz. But there is a sessions tab on the website, so you can go back and rewind this and figure out all the cool stuff we talked about today. I don't know the exact date, but Rob Ray will probably pop on and talk about PAX 8 Beyond. If you aren't doing anything the week of the, I think it's 9, 10, 11 are the dates of the event.
Yeah, June.
Go check it out now and like, circle it and like make a decision if you're going to go, because I think like there's like 25% tickets left from what somebody told me earlier.
Strongly recommend. And the early bird pricing expires at the end of this month.
Bingo. Strongly recommend that you take a hard look at that one. And it's right at the beginning of the summer vacation season, so like you haven't gone anywhere yet, right? Maybe Denver could be your.
And it's at the Gaylord, so it's got like lazy rivers and pools. I mean, bring the family, you know, let them play during the day.
I was just there yesterday, and they renovated like half the place, so it's pretty interesting. Anyway, thank you for coming on, guys. Thanks for watching. Again, we do these like twice a week, so keep watching, keep following, and we hope to see you out on the road somewhere, because you know we're kind of in the thick of things now. So definitely sign up for those block parties ahead of time, register ahead of time. You can always cancel; it's a free ticket if you're an MSP, so nothing to lose. And for the people that are coming out to Nashville next week for MSP Community Minds. Looking forward to seeing you guys in person. Got a lot of smart people in the room. So looking to kind of bump that bar up, Dom. Trying to help people learn. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks.
See ya.